Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Hey, are you looking to expand and grow your business? Are you looking for that edge, that next step up, that paradigm shift? Well, one of the best ways to get you there is through a mentor or a coach. And today's sponsor, Trevor McGregor, he is the man. He's going to get you to be laser focused, to get you onto that next level. And I know from experience dealing with Trevor, he is a master coach, peak performance coach, well over 10,000 coaching hours through clients all over the world. And he helps you achieve better health, more wealth and freedom and contribution than you ever thought possible. Have that coach that holds your feet to the fire. Go on to Trevor's website, coachwithtrevor.com. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. And there you can get a free strategy session with Trevor. And you can decide if he's the right fit for you and you're the right fit for him. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. You will not be disappointed. Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20, and if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it, episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars. To claim your free course today. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. With me is John Stiles with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing today, Todd?
I'm doing awesome. We got 40 degrees, sunny, and it's February, so that's awesome. After what? We got like 3 feet of snow on the ground now.
Right.
And about 3 feet on our roof, so I did some shoveling of my roof from the ground.
Right.
The other day.
It's on my to-do list too.
Yeah. Anybody who's listening from like Florida or whatever doesn't really understand this. Or really even Kentucky. So I was in Kentucky last week and they don't understand that either. Like, 3 feet of snow and 20 below. What's that? So, well, we're here with another Hump Day Hustle and we're going to be talking about doing the apartment series and talking about making it and formulating offers and sending those out and kind of just the starter on that.
Yeah, sounds good. Before we get into that, if you don't mind, so you just traveled back from a trip and now you had closed on a property about like 2 weeks ago, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, something like that. Early February, beginning of February.
So sure. And then, so what was this recent trip for?
Yeah, a couple of reasons. I wanted to get back out to the property right away because it's a value add and it's there's a lot of work to do on the property. So I wanted to get back to the property right away to make sure that we're able to implement our strategy immediately. I was wanting to close on this building. The hope was to be closing on it like first part of December, which would allow us some time to close on it, get our plan going, and then get it started and have a bunch of units ready for the spring market. Now we're already like entering the spring market very soon. People are getting their tax returns back and they want to spend money. And so a lot of people will end up moving right now. So we got to get this ball rolling really quick. So I wanted to get back and make sure, and just make sure all the questions were answered and everything, the scope was set and good. And then I also wanted to look at some properties. Those properties in Indianapolis I ran up to look at. Looked at some stuff in Cincinnati and then also in Lexington as well. So really get back in the market. I like to be, you know, in the market as often as I can, honestly. Right, especially right now when just in a buying mode and trying to figure things out. So it was beautiful there, man. It was 78 degrees and sunny on Tuesday when I was there. It was just like, man, this is heaven. I was loving it. I went for a nice run and just in shorts and a t-shirt in February. Like that doesn't happen to
from Minnesota. Yeah. While I was sledding down the hill with my kids.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, though, actually, so I left on Monday evening, and that was hilarious because I left on Monday evening and it was 20 degrees here, but we had rain in the morning, then we had snow during the day, and then we had rain in the evening. And so my flight that was supposed to leave and connect, I was supposed to have a layover in Chicago and then go to Lexington. Well, I didn't get to, we sat on the plane for like 3 hours. So I missed my connecting flight from Chicago into Lexington. So I had to stay overnight in Chicago, wait till the next morning, and then finally get to Lexington because of the ice/snowstorm. Yeah, we were skiing Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We were downhill skiing. And then on Tuesday, I was, you know, in 78 and sunny, yeah. No snow and shorts and a t-shirt. So gotta love it.
Cool. Well, let's get into the topic for today, unless there's anything else with that trip. No, there.
Let's do it.
So we've been talking about, you know, getting into your first deal with an apartment building. Mm-hmm. We've talked about quite a bit here. So the next topic we wanted to get into is making offers. So why don't you talk briefly, Todd, about kind of understanding the part of the cycle, part of the market cycle that we're in and how that might affect the type of offer that you would make.
Yeah. Boy, I mean, that you're right though, John, that makes a big difference, right? Cause when I was starting in real estate, you know, we were like hitting rock bottom and it was really easy to go in and you see a property for $100,000 and you offer $50,000 and you had a chance of getting that house at $50,000 or $40,000 even. So you could lowball back then. You could come in really low. You held all the chips, right? There was properties. I'll tell a couple properties that I ended up buying. About a fourplex. It was listed at like $250,000. I offered $95,000, ended up negotiating. They countered me, you know, up to whatever, $178,000 or something like that. So, you know, way up there. And, but I knew since they came down so much from their offer, I knew they're ready to play ball. So I countered back, went up like $3,000. They came down another, you know, $50,000. I countered back, went up like $2,000. They came down and met me and said, okay, let's do it. I ended up getting that building. I think it was $98,000 or $96,000, somewhere around. Under $100,000. Just crazy. I had another property. This was a single family house. And right now that this same single family house, I bet would go for $250,000 to $275,000. Anyway, I don't remember the exact numbers, but I think it was listed on the market for right around $80,000. And I came in and I offered like $20,000 and they rejected me. I didn't offer $20,000. I offered like $50,000, I think it was. They rejected me. Then they dropped the price a little while later. I came in and I offered, you know, like $48,000. They said no. You know, they dropped the price again a little while later. I came in, I offered like 46. They said no. Anyway, this kept on going on. I bet I made 3 to 4 offers, at minimum, 4 to 5 offers probably. And they kept on dropping their price. Finally, they dropped, they kept on dropping, dropping, dropping. Finally, I ended up buying it for like $18,000 from them. I was willing to pay 50, but I was just patient and I didn't want to overpay, and they kept on going down in price, and it was a big project. Nobody else wanted to do it. And I ended up buying that thing for, yeah, somewhere around 18,000, 16, somewhat, something like that. And it worked out really well in the end, let's just say. So that's on a down cycle. You can do stuff like that. You can be really patient. You can, you know, you can lowball, you can just, you hold all the chips. But today we're in a different market. So that was, you know, from maybe 2008 all the way until maybe 2012, and depending on where you are in the country, of course, it varies. But 2013, we started getting more competitive. 14, 15, 16, 17, we're just getting more and more and more competitive. As now as we sit, 2017, now 2018, it's really competitive. And especially in the markets I'm in, you can't just go in and lowball. If you go in and lowball, your chances of getting something are very slim. Your chances of insulting somebody are very high. And your chances of just being taken serious are really slim. So if there's a property listed for, you know, $1 million and you're going to come in and offer, you know, $650, well, that was okay in 2010, but today you're just not going to be taken serious. It's just, yeah. It's just, you're not. So it, unless you're going to come in, maybe you could offer 900, maybe you could offer 850. But you probably wouldn't get taken serious if you offer much less. So you got to be competitive. You've got to make sure that you're thinking about where you are in the market cycle. And yes, again, I'm all about being conservative. We talked last time in underwriting, be very conservative, make sure you can make money. If the deal doesn't work at all and you have to lowball, a major lowball just to make it work, I just wouldn't even write on it.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. The sellers today, it seems like they're coming out of the woodwork as the ones that couldn't have sold previously because they owed too much on it. Yeah. But, and maybe the property is in poor condition, or maybe it is or isn't, but now since the prices are going up, they can finally sell in order to break even or maybe make a profit. And some of them are getting kind of greedy too. They're look how much I can make. I'm going to milk it for all it's worth. It's my seller's market. So can't really blame them if you're in that position, but just have to keep that all in mind with our current place in the market.
So. Yeah, well, and absolutely, and that's a good point to be thinking about, is that these sellers are getting greedy, which, why not, right? You should get the most amount of money you can for your property, so why not? I was just in Indianapolis and talking with the broker, and I said, do you get anything that are you guys putting a lot of off-market stuff out there? And she said, no, quite frankly, we are very much trying to pound it into all of our sellers' heads that they need to put their properties on the market. Yep. And the reason being is because they feel like they're going to get them a lot more money if there's a bidding war on it. This market is hot. So why would we not list the thing? Let's throw it on the market. Let's get a bidding war. Let's get 25 offers on this thing and see who's willing and potentially dumb enough to pay the most amount of money. And so you got to be careful when you are in that, because you don't want to be the one dumb enough to pay way more than what it's worth. If you get it and the numbers truly work because you're being conservative, great. But if you get it and you're the only idiot that was willing to pay, you know, $100,000 more than everybody else, well, you know, I guess we'll see you on the next downturn.
Well, one, not that we're wrapping up yet, but one takeaway I'd point out right away is just this act of putting in offers. You can never know if your offer would be accepted if you don't submit it.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. It just like I said earlier, just don't just throw in a low ball offer because those are the numbers that work for you. You've got to understand a little bit of the deal, a little bit about the motivation of the seller, and what's going on in the market. Is this thing listed? And are they expecting 20 offers? I mean, it's as simple as asking the broker, look, how many offers are there? How many offers do you expect? If they expect 20 offers, well, and they're expecting offers to be, let's say, $1 million, well, why come in with a $600,000 offer or $700,000 or an $800,000 offer?
Yeah.
So yes, make offers, but understand where you're at with your offer and does it make sense? If it's an off-market deal, the broker says, oh, they're motivated, they want to get rid of this thing, they'd like $1 million, but you go, well, geez, $850,000 is what works for me. Well, then you should maybe consider coming in close to $850,000, to see how motivated they really are.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to understand and feel out the situation, decide when it's right to make a quote unquote low ball offer versus, you know, paying what it's worth.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Well, what would you say is a good way to have your offer stand out from the other ones that you're competing with?
Yeah. So let's just say there's two types of people you're going to offer, right? So you're going to make an offer through a broker, or you're going to make an offer directly to the seller. So let's just say you're making an offer through a broker and it's a listed property that's going to have some competition. Probably the best thing you can do is, well, A, you want to start with building a rapport with that broker. Hopefully it's not the first time you've ever talked to them. Hopefully you've been emailing them. Hopefully you've met them. Hopefully you've viewed some properties with them, sat down in their office, maybe bought them lunch. So you built some rapport so they understand who you are. And they know that, you know, what your buying criteria is. They know what your expectations are, all that kind of stuff. So, but then when we're presenting an offer, what do we want to be doing? Well, we want to make sure that that presentation on our offer looks professional. So we want to have our letter of intent, which is basically just your shortened version of an offer. It's not like you're offering on a single family. A letter of intent's like a 3 to 5 page checklist, basically. This is my price, all that kind of stuff. We can talk about that in a second if you want. And then we also want to have like a bio, who you are, what your company is, who are your strategic partners, your property management company, your lenders, your attorneys, all that kind of stuff. Why are you going to make this thing work? Especially when you're talking, and I'm talking apartment buildings, I'm talking, you know, 100 unit type apartment buildings. You want to make yourself stand out. And then what's your business plan? You know, what are you planning on doing to that property? And it may sound weird to somebody who hasn't done it, but the seller wants to know, are you serious? Are you going to be able to perform on this property the way you think? Because they want to sell it to somebody that is going to actually close on the property. And quite frankly, a lot of them actually want to see you to be successful on it. So they want to sell to people that are going to be successful and be able to implement their business plan. So I think that's important. And then the other thing, that would be very helpful is if you have a letter of interest from the lender as well. So if you're going to use a mortgage broker, if you're going to use, let's say, US Bank or something like that, get a letter of interest from them that says that, hey, we are interested in financing this property and we are interested in financing this buyer.
Yeah, and that's maybe something we can talk about briefly. You know, compared to the residential world where you go out and you get a pre-approval letter, they don't tip. I mean, depending who you talk to, which lenders, they're not really going to be apt to give you that type of a letter for a commercial type deal.
They're going to give you or potentially give you a letter of interest. So it just, they've looked at the deal. It's very deal specific. They've looked at the deal and said, yep, we're interested in this property. We know this buyer. We're interested in dealing with this buyer. It's not necessarily a pre-approval. They maybe haven't dug into everything in detail. It's a kind of a feel good thing that the seller knows, okay, at least they've done a little bit of homework and they know that they can potentially get financing on this deal.
Yep. So, yeah, I would totally agree that, you know, after the seller has seen, you know, the purchase price and maybe a few other terms, and if they feel somewhat comfortable with that, you know, their next concern is, who is this that's giving me the offer? Yeah. Are they a credible, reputable person? Are they going to follow through? Do they know what they're doing? So all those different things that you mentioned to include with your offer make a lot of sense.
Yeah, yeah. With the letter of intent, you know, I think the main purpose of that letter of intent is, let's cover some of the potential things that we need to make sure are included in our purchase agreement. The letter of intent is it's a binding agreement, but it's not the full purchase agreement, right? So there's not fine details in it. So you're going to ask for purchase price, what our due diligence period is, what our financing period is, when our earnest money becomes hard, how much earnest money we put into it. We're going to talk about the documents that the seller needs to give us, which, you know, the tax returns and profit loss and rent rolls and all that kind of stuff, and bank statements. And then it's going to say, you know, who the brokers are, if there's any, and, you know, some other minor things like rents, how are they prorated, deposits, all that kind of stuff. If the deal is said, agreed upon, then signed, that letter of intent, then we go and we get a full-blown purchase and sale agreement, which I would highly suggest you have an attorney write-up or at least attorney review if you're going to use the MLS broker type forms. I would at least have the attorneys thoroughly review those.
Yep. Real estate agents, you know, our training in law is very limited. You know, we are licensed because we have that limited amount of training, but it only goes so far in commercial deals. So, it's definitely a good advice to seek out legal counsel on those bigger, more expensive contracts.
Yeah. You know, and like residential, right. The boards have spent a lot more time on the residential contracts and made it way, way more of a boilerplate. And as a residential agent, you'd probably never advise your client not to get legal advice. So it's still definitely there. But I just think the residential purchase agreement is much less needed to get that extra legal advice. And one of the main reasons is because there's been so much time and effort and money spent on the legal purchase agreement to make it right. And there's less moving parts, quite frankly. You don't need to know what your seller's tax returns look like for any reason. If you're buying a house to live in, who cares, right? You want to know, has there been water coming into the basement? Has there been, you know, termites or, you know, other things like that? That's what you want to know. So you want to make sure that the seller is actually telling you the truth. That's why you have that disclosure agreement.
Yeah. With commercial properties, you know, there's so many variables of types of properties, types of businesses, types of transactions and how they would take place. So that's why they get a little bit more complicated and can't be a simple boilerplate. I mean, there is a boilerplate transaction or document, but it's like you're saying, it's a good idea to get it reviewed for your specific transaction.
Yeah.
So cool. Okay. So it's getting back to just making the offer. What other points should we keep in mind?
Well, I would say, you know, if you can, and if you want to, try to be creative as well. I like putting in options into my contract. So I like putting in, here's option A. I'll pay you $5 million for the building with new financing. So basically cash to the seller. Option B is I'll give you $5,050,000. If you give me a 10% seller carryback for, let's say, 3 years, 5% interest, show them the payment charts, show them what they're receiving every single month for that, you know, 10% carryback. And I give them an extra 50 grand. So I give them an extra 50 grand. Plus, I'm giving them interest. That might be attractive to some sellers. Maybe I do another one where I pay 5.1 or 5.2 or maybe even more with complete seller financing. Let's say I pay $5.3 million if they're willing to give me a 90% loan to purchase. So I only have to come up with 10% at 5% interest, 5-year balloon, something like that. So you can get creative. What I would say is if you're going to get creative, what you need to do is you have to show them why they should take some of those offers, right? So it's best if you can, A, build rapport. And then also it's great if you can show them what benefit it is. And it's good always to know what their motivations are. So you can ask your broker, you know, why are they selling? What's going on? Maybe they're just retiring. Well, if they're retiring, they may not want that payment today. They may like 5% interest. I mean, I negotiated on a 22-unit building in Cincinnati where the seller financed. I only came up with 10% down. He financed the rest, and he loved it because he likes seeing the interest payment. I give him it's roughly $2,300 a month. I give him a check. $2,300 a month, every single month that's coming in. He was doing really poorly on the property. My guess is he wasn't making $2,300 a month on that property, not even close. Now he is, and he's got no work. He's doing nothing. You know, he's collecting that check for me. So he loved it. I actually paid less to do it that way than if I would have bought it cash. So you can get creative, find out their motivations, find out what they're really looking for, and then you can put some of those options into there. I showed them an amortization schedule. This is what you're going to get every month. This is what your interest is over 5 years. And when he looked at that, he's like, yeah, I love that. I love that option. That's what I want. And so, like I said, you're paying them $2,300 or so a month, and he's making all this interest for potentially up to 5 years. And my guess is he would say, let's do it for five more if I pay him every single month, which I will. My guess is he'll say, yeah, let's renew this thing. 5 more years. Let's do it. Now, he might want more interest if interest rates are at 12%, but anybody would, right? Right.
Well, that's, I just love that strategy of having the seller stay in the deal, because, I mean, when a seller has owned a property for many years, you know, they're going to have potentially huge capital gains, and they may or may not realize the type of tax implication that has. So if you can kind of become educated on what that is, yeah, and how to mitigate that, you can really come at it as a problem solver. That they may not even realize the problem that they're about to have. You know, of course, they could look into other things like 1031 exchange, but with the market the way it is, they might not be able to find a new building to exchange into. So if they can stay with the same building that they already know and are comfortable with, and, you know, it's still secured, most likely, if it's a secured mortgage, to the property that they know, and then they can just sit back, like you said, the example that you gave, that seller no longer has to worry about the tenants, the trash, the toilets.
Right.
They can just worry about their mailbox money.
Yeah. Yeah, collecting those checks, man. And that works for some people. They love that idea. They still understand the power and what real estate does for them. It's not that changed. It's just that, especially those that are self-managing or those who've let their properties become kind of a hindrance upon themselves, those people might be happy to continue to get that monthly payment, but they just don't want to deal with the maintenance. They don't want to deal with the tenants. They're just tired of it. This guy didn't want to deal with that stuff.
So. Okay. Well, very good. Any last notes or thoughts on this topic?
Yeah. I would just to tell everybody, make sure that when you're getting ready to present an offer, you have built the rapport that you need to build. I think that's one of the most important things with commercial real estate, is that the people who you're dealing with need to know and trust that you're actually going to be able to perform. And so, and that's difficult, especially if you're a newer buyer and if you've never done a deal. How do people know and trust that you can actually close on the deal? They really don't. So that is tough, and you may have to either buy a smaller deal than what you're planning on buying, or buy a deal that's not quite as good. That's just a single, not a double or a triple. But you have to build that trust and rapport. And the more you do that, the better job you do at it, the more likely you're going to get your offers accepted and you're going to be taken serious. So that would be number one. Number two is, I'd say, learn how to negotiate. And so there's a book called Never Split the Difference. One of my favorite books by Chris Voss. So Never Split the Difference. He's a old or ex FBI hostage negotiator. I actually listened to the Audible, I think, two or three times now, like the book. So he talks, how to negotiate with people. And then the next one would be, don't wait for just the perfect deal to come around, right? Because when the perfect deal finally does come around, someone else is going to buy it, from you. Out from under you. So you got to be writing on any deal that works, without being too crazy about it. But any deal that works, you got to be writing on those. And then the last thing is, be creative. If you like the deal, then try to find out how to make that thing work, and try to find out what works for the seller. If you like the deal, write on it and try to make it work.
Yeah. Those are great points. I've heard Chris Voss speak, on other podcasts.
Yeah.
And he's got a lot of great content and a lot of great tips. So that's a great one to be paying attention to. Chances are, especially in this market where it's really favoring the sellers, you're only going to get a percentage of the deals that you write on if you're making good, conservative offers like you've talked about.
Yeah.
So if you're making zero offers, you're going to get zero deals. So you definitely got to, follow all these steps we've been talking about and get to a place where you're comfortable submitting offers.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you have to have deals coming to you. So again, building that rapport, building those relationships is huge. I mean, nobody's going to get a deal if you don't reach out to people, if you don't know who's selling deals in that market, how do you expect to get deals? So people that just kind of look on the internet and think that deals are going to fall in their lap, well, I got news for you, that's not going to happen. So even when the market was, even when the market was cold, quote unquote cold, back in 08, 9, 10, 11, 12, I would still write probably 50 offers to every one property I would get. It was just a different strategy. When I was writing 50 to 1, I would look at the properties, they would be listed for 100 and I'd be offering, you know, 50, 60,000. Right. And most of them I get rejected, and then a few I get, and I know when I got them, they were a good deal. Now it's not that you can just write on, if it's listed for 100,000, which nothing is, but if it's listed for 100,000, you can't just write an offer for 50, 60 grand, expect to get it. You better be at, you know, 90, maybe 100, maybe even 110 grand to get that offer. So it's a different strategy now, but it's still the same rule applies. You still got to write 50 offers to get one or whatever it is. You still got to be actively pursuing properties consistently.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, great. And that's a great point about just talking to people, because we've touched on this before, but you know, if you can tell the brokers specifically what you're looking for, when they find that, they'll think of you. Rather than if you just tell them you're looking for any good deal. So just to reiterate on that point there.
Yeah. At least hopefully they think of you. But if they're not thinking of you, you got to figure out a way to get, you know, on you that list. Yeah. You got to talk to them more often. You got to be able to reach out to them. And eventually as you start to buy, you will. So some brokers just won't take you serious. It's just period. They're not going to take you serious. They're not going to connect with you. They're not going to think of you when a deal comes up. You're going to have to pester them to get anything. But then all of a sudden you start buying, you get one or two deals, and then they go, oh, geez, this guy's serious. Okay, I want to sell him something now or her something now. So I just bought this 84 unit, right, just a few weeks ago in Lexington. And that's my first property in Lexington. I bought, you know, properties in Cincinnati, Milwaukee, and the Twin Cities, but I had nothing in Lexington. I bought this 84 unit property, and I've had three brokers since I closed on this deal call me and ask me if I'm interested in buying more. So once you buy some properties, trust me, you know, you'll be starting to get taken seriously after that. People know that, okay, this guy's actually, he's not just all talk. So I think that's about it, John. You got anything else to add?
I think that covers the topic pretty well. So we just want to remind the listeners that if you would do us the favor, you know, we'd really appreciate you interacting with us online. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on iTunes, on YouTube. Just look up Pillars of Wealth Creation. It's the same whichever platform you go to. And then be sure to either comment on the episode to let us know what you liked about it or questions that you have. Give us a thumbs up, you know, give us a review. We'd love to just have you interact with us there.
Yeah. And I think, the best place for a rating review would be iTunes, right? You can go on iTunes, give a rating review. That helps us out a ton. Cause I think iTunes is kind of like the machine behind everything. So, awesome. Well, I appreciate that. And you have a great rest of the day. Make every day Saturday, man.
You do it too.
Are you ready to start investing in real estate today but don't know where to start? Sometimes investing can seem way too complicated, but it actually couldn't be any easier than with homeinvest.com. You know the co-founder and my friend, Nate Armstrong. He appeared on episode 20. And if you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. Episode number 20. Home Invest is a company that allows you to invest in turnkey real estate. Their goal is to build powerful investment tools that make real estate investing accessible to everyone. They have contractors and property managers available for you with the click of your mouse. While other real estate agents can only offer a property, Home Invest brings you a full turnkey package that allows you to diversify your investments, earn passive income, and start building equity in properties. Their simple, intuitive design allows newcomers and experienced investors alike to hit the ground running and to be able to choose the properties when they want and where they want. View easy-to-understand charts and data to allow you to buy in only a few clicks or just a simple phone call. With Home Invest, you'll be building your portfolio as quickly or as slowly as you would like. And right now, Home Invest is giving our listeners, Pillar of Wealth Creation listeners, a free course on how to finally win in real estate investing. So go to homeinvest.com/pillars. That's homeinvest.com/pillars to claim your free course today.